Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Summer Special Podcast.
And indeed it is our Summer Special Podcast. It's podcast number 29.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually 30 for us.
Yes.
Because there was a pilot episode.
Yeah. Legendary
which will never
pilot.
See the light of day.
No.
Maybe
away.
One day when we win an award, I'll roll it out.
I think they'd take it back.
But in this 29th podcast, we're going to review what we've done so far in 2019, have a little look ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And along the way, we've got some summer diversion recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
So, Caroline, what were you thinking? Yeah.
Well, I think it's generally some bit of a... We're having a couple of weeks off, so it's a bit of a retrospective over what we've done. But not we don't want to go too... You know, deep into it because you want people to listen back if they've missed any episodes.
Yeah, so just signposting back.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then having a little bit of a look ahead because we are taking that time off to sort of what can people expect if they tune into the next crop of episodes in like next month.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had some feedback as well. But
yeah.
We'll go into that later.
Yeah.
Let's kick off. Claire, we inadvertently created a character.
Yeah, so episode 24, one of my favourite podcasts that we've done, simply for the birth of Dr. Dolphin.
Oh, gosh.
I don't actually remember anything else that we talked about in that podcast. There was a little bit on Alexa and healthcare, was there?
Yeah, that maybe set us up for being silly, because that did seem quite a silly idea.
Yeah, oh, that was the, you can use Alexa to say, hey, I've got that
yeah.
This horrible spot, and it's... Like
oozing got gangrene.
Stuff. It's like you're not going to ask Alexa stuff like that out loud.
Just in the kitchen.
Yeah, and the NHS were kind of working on the proviso that you would feel comfortable doing that. And we were like,
no,
one ever would.
Don't even want to say it to a doctor.
No, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we were talking about that. We were talking about whether or not there should be childcare at tech events.
Yeah.
Which we all agreed there should. Full
there
stop.
Should.
Moving
yes.
on.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we sorted that out.
Yeah. But yeah, specifically for. I have a habit of meowing things at home. On tech trips, I have actually gotten other journalists to meow stuff before.
Oh.
Just because it's something that I'm always doing.
Okay.
So you'll just start meowing Katy Perry, you know, like... That's not a Katy Perry song, but, you know, copyright and all that.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Dr. Dolphin theme tune, something that I came up with on podcast number 24...
I think the concept was he was someone who you, Caroline, interviewed.
Yeah.
And he'd
yeah.
adapted one kind of technology
yes.
for another purpose.
It was
yeah.
a server monitoring tool that he had. His company started applying to suicide prevention. So it's quite a serious use case. And
yeah.
His name was Ricky Dolphin. But he was making the case that sometimes you have to think outside the box of technology, not just think, okay, it's been designed for this, I'll use it for this, because it could have other use cases and prove useful as well.
Yeah, and I thought that could be the theme of his TV show, using technologies for things that they weren't created for, hence he needed a theme tune for a TV show, and we'd been talking about doctors, so I think Dr. Dolphin,
mm-hmm.
And then I started singing something.
Yeah,
not
and I believe
unusual.
they've taken this up, haven't they? We did have some feedback.
No, we didn't.
Not
we
a
didn't
single
have any
thing.
Feedback.
No, not on that. No.
Oh
okay.
Not
maybe
even.
This time.
Thanks for mentioning him in the podcast.
No, not at all.
That would be great.
No. I came back from holiday and I was like, oh god, like the PR's probably heard this, and I had an email from the PR in my inbox. I was like, I read it when I was on holiday, but I was like, oh, I'm not going to read that till I get home. That one, and yeah, got back and she hadn't mentioned anything about. The song on the podcast, and I was kind of relieved. That was the best
okay.
kind of feedback.
So he doesn't want to be involved in the TV show.
Well, I think it's probably worth a conversation about whether or not he'd be interested in signing over the rights to it, or if he'd want an executive producer. I mean, you always got to leave the door open for follow up negotiations,
of
and
course,
conversations and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he might even want to do backing vocals. Who can say?
Well, Claire, we know, has a tendency to search the highways and byways of YouTube and. Obscure TV channels to look for things, whereas Caroline and I were a bit more mainstream in our TV preferences, would you not say? But certainly one of the big events in terms of TV this year was Line of Duty, which, Claire, you're not a big fan of.
It's not that I'm not a big fan, I just don't
Unlike
watch
Game
it.
Of Thrones, which you really don't
I hate
like.
Game of Thrones.
Hmm.
Yeah, no opinion on Line of Duty. Never watched it. Might hate it, might love it, who knows?
So we weren't allowed to talk about Game of Thrones, but Line of Duty.
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Mm. Yeah, we did. This was one of the, we did a couple of. Well, I was going to say a couple. We did a few episodes where the wheels sort of fell off
a little bit.
But we did.
One of them I wasn't there to keep you under control.
Yeah, and then we did a couple where we deliberately took the wheels off and threw them themselves. And that, this is what, that was the Line of Duty podcast where we decided to have a kind of critical look at Line of Duty in terms of how they use technology. And I was listening back to it, and basically. It's a great show, but from all our feedback, it sort of sounds like they use technology just to get them out of little plot holes. And so, like, kind of, what's happening here? Oh, metadata. That's
so
that
what exactly
one of Brian's
is this
thing. So our editor in chief, Brian Glenn, was in on that podcast.
Yeah,
he's a big fan, and of course, he is our Ted Hastings.
He's a gaffer.
Is it not just about polices? The police people.
It's about. A particular group of officers, anti-corruption unit.
Anti-corruption.
So they investigate bank coppers.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
okay.
And their big protagonist is this organised crime group, the OCG. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
and
they were,
use tech.
Yeah, but we were kind of questioning if the way they use tech is really—is that really how the police in real life use technology, or if they are they just deploying it in certain ways in the show because it gets them out of a bit of a cul-de-sac they might have got in with the plot and characters and stuff. So it's just lots of things like, oh god, we need to get hold of this person. Like, oh, we've got phone data. Like, yeah. Like, so it's like, okay, that sorted that out. But it's a really good show, but. Yeah, I think some of it, listening back, maybe their use of technology is a little bit questionable. And we were having this thing about how they had, like, one of the characters who's trying to infiltrate this organised crime group, one of these anti-corruption officers, Hastings, who Brian mentioned. So they're like, okay, to get in with the group, you need to be able to mimic how they use Instant Messenger and the phrases they use and stuff like this. So they've got basically a flowchart. And she's like, oh, maybe if they say something like this, you respond with this. But if they respond with this, you go a different route around the flowchart.
I mean, could you not make an AI do that?
That's exactly what the point I made on the podcast. I was like, we don't need this. Like, some of their tech gets them out of pot holes. Other ones, they're missing huge opportunities to actually probably save some money in the production by not having that character go, do this bit next. Like,
they
don't need you.
The character that Caroline's just mentioned was... she was like a cyber... police officer.
Okay.
So she was she was one of ours.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember her name.
No,
which tells you quite a lot.
Quite a lot about how memorable she was.
Also, from memory, I might be misremembering this, but wasn't all of these conversations where they're tapping into the instant messenger, they're all done in like a dark room, like, just to give, like, that's how we all do our best work, isn't it? Like, you know, no one cares about the fact that, you know, squinting at screens all day is going to destroy your eyesight, and switch all the lights off and just...
I will be honest with you, most of my degree was spent coding at night in a hoodie in the dark.
Okay, so there we go. This is
so that was my safe space in the dark. No one can hurt you there.
Okay.
And Caroline, you took a big deep dive into burner phones.
I really wanted to make more of this. I wondered if, like, I wanted to get the market share figures for, like, pay-as-you-go phones. And just, like, see, was there any, like, anywhere in, like, a Gartner report anywhere or a Forrester report that, like, you know, there's a big group, you know, there's big sales that go to a certain vertical, but we're not sure what it is, but just a group that we can't account for. And I was like, it's going to be organised crime. But Gartner and all those people that miss a trip, they don't track any of that stuff. But I did make the point as well that it's quite wasteful, you know, e-waste is a big problem, and these people just making calls on the phone and throwing it, it's not good for landfill.
Can you recycle them?
Yeah, I think so. E-waste, you can.
Well, that would be quite nice. Yeah. And then all of the evidence is gone, so...
Yeah. Well, if you're listening to this, anyone who's, I don't know, a mafia boss, looking for a bit of an environmental conscience, then get to that.
I mean, break it in half first, because that looks really fun on television.
They do that in Breaking Bad.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. I think it's quite old now, Breaking Bad, so I think they're all flip phones.
Oh.
So they can do that.
It's weird to break a flip phone in half, though.
Yeah, whereas on Line of Duty, they're all pretty much like iPhones, or like probably like whatever smartphones, generally.
So, Line of Duty, there were technology elements that we could discuss.
Yes.
And that's podcast 14.
Yeah, and that was good. But then we also did another one where we looked, we did, the three of us did a deep dive into the technology used at Holby City after they had that...
the crossover episode.
Yeah, with Casualty. It was like a special episode showing like the after effects of a cyber attack and like the NHS. And then, and the thing that was quite good on that, I think, is if you contrast it with Line of Duty, their actual use of technology did seem quite genuine. Like all the things you think, if things were to go wrong in a hospital from a technology perspective, yeah, oh, that's believable. Like that happened. Whereas, yeah, it was quite an interesting look at how...
especially in view of Matt Hancock's war on paper.
War, but also the war on pages as well. That was announced about the week before this episode aired.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's pretty much the only thing that kept one of the patients alive was being able to communicate by pager.
And it made me think back to that episode when there was the mass power cut in London a couple of weeks ago. Because it said that some hospitals were affected by the mass power cut, which apparently was not a cyber attack, says the National Grid. But yeah, and it made me think of, oh my god, all the technology is gone down, what am I going to do?
Yeah, so I quite like those episodes of this podcast where we do stuff like that.
Yeah, just, that's fun.
Yeah, and like I say, we've done two. We need a third one really to make it a trend or like a series that we do.
I'm sure we can find something.
We should do another one before the end of the year.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I was going to suggest, because one of Brian's favourite programmes is Love Island, so is there anything we can do?
The technology on Love Island.
Well, there will be a Christmas one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They're doing a winter version, aren't they?
Maybe we should talk about, if they use... because there's been psychology problems, haven't there?
Psychological problems.
That's the one?
Yeah.
So maybe they should be monitoring how people are getting on in there to stop people from suffering from, stress and anxiety.
You mean like
and stuff.
Sensors on their bodies and stuff?
Yeah, or just checking in with them, blood pressure, I don't know. I'm sure there's something they could do.
Yeah.
That's absolutely completely unprompted. There is Channel 4's reality show, The Circle.
I love that.
That was all based around social media and like people living in a block of flats.
Oh, Brian, you would love it.
Yeah, they all live in a block of flats, but they don't see each other, but they all communicate via
an avatar.
A social media app that's been created so they can all converse, but people aren't who they say they are.
Yeah, some people go in choosing to be completely the opposite of who they actually are.
Yeah.
In fact, the person who won last year was a guy posing as a girl.
Yeah, and he was like, wasn't he like catfishing people? Like,
yeah. And then one of the guys who was completely real, who had a turtle, oh my god, started the show, the turtle. Yeah, and he got really upset because he was like, oh, are you... where's my friend Kate? And he was like, oh yeah, I am Kate, sorry. And he thought he'd made a friend, and he just...
He hadn't.
No.
Well, not the friend he thought he'd made.
Well,
I don't think they ever spoke to each other again. He's really, really sad about
that.
It
does sound like Love Island in that case.
But that could round out our trio of those kind of episodes. And then we'll do more and more and more.
Yeah.
Well, when we did our inaugural episode, our first one, I don't think we were thinking about TV programmes and would we be talking about them and so on. But we did kick off, the first ever thing that we discussed was the world's most beautiful data centre.
Was that in the first episode?
It
wow!
Oh my god, that seems like ages ago.
It was in Barcelona, wasn't it?
It's in a chapel. I think I might have referred to it as a cathedral and thing. Totally overblown.
Everyone's like, no.
It was a chapel. Yeah, in the grounds of this university that's been repurposed and kitted out with server rooms and stuff like that.
Mm. You were pretty impressed by it.
I mean, most of the data centres I go to are A, in Slough, and in like cardboard boxes, or repurposed like containers, basically. Mm. So, it's very nice.
Nice.
Mm.
And there was a Dan Brown reference.
Oh yeah, I can't remember what this is. I think the data centre is talked about in one of his books, but I can't remember what the name of the book is now.
It's called Origin.
Oh, okay.
Not that I've read it.
No, me neither.
But I have heard of it. And another one of his books is Angels and Demons.
Yeah.
Which is set at CERN.
Is
it? Which is where the World Wide Web was invented.
Oh!
You think it's going to go one way, it goes another. You don't know where it's going to take you. The beauty of Brian's links.
Oh.
And for the 30th anniversary of the web invented by Tim Berners-Lee, we wheeled out Cliff Saren.
Oh, poor Cliff, it makes it sound like we take him out of the cupboard.
He did a really, really good job and reminded us all about the walled gardens of the early internet. AOL, CompuServe.
Yeah.
You're probably too young to remember those.
I learned about them, but...
AOL, we used to get the free disc, and this, like, on, like, you used to get a free disc on the front of magazines.
Yeah.
So if you want to join AOL, put this in your computer.
Yeah.
I think it's, like, I don't know, from memory, it's like, you only get 30 days of AOL, so enjoy it, and then... So, yeah, which, it's quite dangerous, really, giving kids that. But yeah,
was,
I remember that.
They were very closed...
Mm.
Communities.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then Facebook came along to reinvent the closed community in a sense.
Well, before
cutting
that
against
was
the openness of the web.
MSN.
Yeah.
MSN Messenger. Mm-hmm. Everyone remembers the days of MSN Messenger.
Have you seen Kevin Bridges's?
His new one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it the other night.
Yeah. He's just turned 30, or he's just over 30.
Yeah.
He was doing a big rant about
people on social media and how all his friends that, like, before they turned 30, they had names like Craigie, but now once you go 30, you lose the Y, so you're just Craig.
Oh.
And he said all his friends, now you see them on Facebook, and they're kind of at soft play areas just posing with their kids, but there's like something in their eyes like, help me. It's really good. It's an iPlayer at the minute, but yeah, I watched it the other night. He's hilarious. He's so good.
I'll have to check that out.
Mm.
Yeah, so we had that one with Cliff. Cliff kind of guiding us through the 30th anniversary of the web. And then we wheeled him out again, didn't we, for the moon landing.
He's not the official anniversary correspondent.
Well, that's what he said. He did say, do you only wheel me out for anniversaries? But we did we not?
Yeah.
The moon landing, yeah, the moon, the 50th anniversary.
I tried to engage in Folly on that podcast. I tried to sort of like take him off on an adventure into something. I listened back to it and I made I can't remember what the reference was right now, but I said something like, oh, and blah, 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 what about this? And Cliff just went, okay. And then carried on with what he was saying. He was so not on board with me trying to take it off.
You're trying to create Folly on a podcast where people are talking about going to space. There's like, what more Folly do you want?
Ultimate Folly!
He's probably just like, oh, okay, so space isn't good enough for you. Okay, where do we go now then?
Well, Claire did ask, are you the sort of people who would go to space?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. And were you?
Oh, I said immediately no.
No,
no chance.
No. No, don't mess about with it, mate.
I'd send a lot more people up there and then I'd have like fewer people actually on Earth surrounded.
Earth is crowded.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Oh, you go.
Yeah,
I'll
do you know
up.
What?
I'll see you up there.
I'll be there in a bit.
Yeah, I won't turn up.
Yeah, it is quite cool though that as Computer Weekly, we covered the moon landing in 1969.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Cliff did this article 10 years ago for the 40th, which has been one of our most popular stories
ever. We
don't
tell Cliff that
one.
No. Oh, no, he knows all right. And it attracts interesting commentary, doesn't it, from lunatics?
Yeah, there were a lot of people commenting on it.
Critics.
Yes,
you know,
sorry.
Yeah.
I just to note, I wasn't. Oh, lunatics, get it? Because it's the lunar.
yes. There probably are. There probably is some kind of group that refers to themselves like the ring pro space. Like, bloody love it up there.
Looks great. So when I joined Computer Weekly as editorial assistant, I was responsible for moderating some of the comments, and they were wild. They made my week, those ones. The ones
did
that
they?
Were on the, yeah, they did. There were some that were very, very entertaining.
Very detailed.
Talking about, you know, like the different types of LEDs in pictures and what had and hadn't been invented and whether or not it would be possible for them to actually have done it and all sorts of stuff.
Oh,
it's very interesting. Mm. Rabbit holes abound, you know.
Mm. But we were in awe of the guys doing it in the first place. It must have been so brave.
Yeah.
And they almost got left behind, didn't they?
Well, yeah.
According to Cliff. Anyway.
Yeah, according to Cliff. Mm. And I think I mentioned on the podcast that my friend Tan said that you have to have a very specific mindset. I think you have to already think that you're not coming back when you go.
Mm. Yeah, because I think otherwise you just lose your mind when you're up there.
Yeah, well, no, this is it.
Yeah.
But then, you know when you're sort of like... Oh yeah, like I know that I'm not coming back, but in your mind you're like, I'm coming back.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's ever a mindset that you can actually really have.
Mm.
until you realise that that's it.
I think if you're that committed to going, you probably have to fool a psychologist into thinking, like, yeah, I've got that mindset, even if you're like, I'm definitely coming. Don't worry.
God, but that's really hard to do. Okay. I'm just thinking someone who would have no concept of coming back was the dog. The Soviet
centre. He doesn't even know where he is.
Like, yeah. The dog, yeah.
The poor
dog.
Yeah,
she didn't come back.
Mm.
But the monkey did.
Yeah.
The American monkey.
The monkey was lucky.
Which raised the whole question of the ethics of sending.
Yeah, they sent
unconsenting animals into space.
They sent a load of geckos up there to monitor their mating habits in zero gravity.
Do you know when you're just saying why?
And then they lost them all. They just, yeah, whatever thing they were in just slipped out of the monitoring thing. Yeah.
And I think this is what I said at the time. I was saying that there must be experimental rats and mice on the International Space Station. And I was just like, why? Mm. Why? Leave it alone.
Yeah.
It's up there, we're down here, and what? Let it just... No, so much money. So much money and time.
Yeah. I think it's just... Yeah, it's just bizarre. I just don't know
how much
benefit the... who cares how they mate in anti-gravity?
Yeah. Just... How do humans mate in anti-gravity? Are
I'm
don't?
Sure there's a few candidates. Give that one a go. Oh, you're not going back. Okay.
Something I failed to mention on the original podcast, which only really occurred to me afterwards, is probably quite important, is because Cliff was going on about how it had kind of developed American IT,
mm-hmm.
right? The fact that they had these computers that got man to the moon,
mm-hmm.
people to the moon, eventually, and as we know, dogs and monkeys and so on. But the Americans seem to have really used computers in the way that the Russians didn't. So for the Russians, it was all about rocketry. It was about just sending up these big, powerful kind of missiles.
Really. Did they really care about bringing people back?
The Russians?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, Yuri Gagarin came back, as we know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, to talk to folk. But I thought that is an interesting thing, though, that the American program helped to give birth to the American IT industry,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Russians, not so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Cliff Sarin did a great job with the anniversaries, the Web 30 and the moon landing, the 50th anniversary of that.
Mm-hmm.
Cliff is, I think he's the longest serving
mm-hmm.
member of the team, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And for sure he worked alongside Mr. Paul Mason, who's probably our most distinguished former journalist. I mentioned Paul because we thought it might be fun, interesting, diverting, to mention some books that we might recommend to readers as they go on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And also we've got conference season
mm-hmm.
coming up,
mm-hmm.
which means lots of travelling.
Mm-hmm.
So the book that I'm recommending is Paul Mason's Clear, Bright Future, A Radical Defence of the Human Being. Which is a great book. I've read about 20 pages of it, and it's fine.
You can't judge a book by its cover, or probably the first 20 pages, but I'm sure we're going
to Well, that's what I'm doing.
Okay, fair enough.
That's a non-fiction, I'm guessing.
It's a non-fiction book, yeah. Yeah, it's... I mean, the title, Clear, Bright Future, comes from a quote from Trotsky, in the kind of frontispiece where Trotsky says... The experience of my life has not only not destroyed my faith in the clear, bright future of mankind, which, given that all his comrades pretty much have been wiped out by Stalin, but on the contrary, has given it an indestructible temper. So there you go, hyper-optimism there, and that's the thing that Paul's gone for. Bases himself also on Marx, but, I mean, our readers don't have to buy into Trotsky or Marx or anything like that. It's about here and now. It's about how we kind of defend ourselves as human beings in the context of a world that's completely drenched in machines, drenched in AI. And he's very concerned about what we should do about that. I think one of the interesting things about Paul Mason's work is, I think if he was the average kind of Guardian or BBC journalist, he probably wouldn't have the kind of, this is a bit of a guess on my part, but the kind of depth of understanding of the IT industry, both sides of it,
yeah.
and AI and things like that, had he not worked at Computer Weekly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great book, actually. I've heard him speak about it as well. Just read the first 20 pages, and it does look like a cracker. Part of his what he's trying to do is demystify machines, because the point is that humans made these algorithms, made these computers.
Yeah.
They didn't come from outer space, right? They were made by humans, and therefore we can do something about them.
Mm. So Paul himself now, what does he do? Is he just an author, or is he still a journalist?
He's an author, filmmaker, and journalist. He's fairly prominent. Used to call him in The Guardian. I think he probably just makes most of his money from his books and from speaking.
Okay.
He's a very good speaker.
Mm.
Very smart guy. Very polymathic.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a music degree. He's he's a big expert on Northern Soul.
Okay.
So that would be my summer book recommendation. Maybe in a less heavy way. I think you've got some things, Caroline.
Yeah, I was saying I'm finding it quite hard to read stuff at the minute. I'm going through a bit of a reader's block. But yeah, I'm finding, and not just a plug for this podcast, but yeah, just finding podcasts sort of helping me pass the time generally. And like you said, with it being coming into conference season, I've been on a lot of trips in the first half of this year, like long haul flights, where the entertainment system on the plane has stopped working. But thankfully, either I've downloaded stuff from Netflix or downloaded a couple of podcasts, I've got something for the 10 hours to do.
Yeah, that's not good, is it?
Yeah. So so one of my favourite ones is a panel show. So it's a panel show, but in a podcast called Do the Right Thing. So it's three comedians or writers on it. The host is a lady called Danielle Ward, and the team captains are an Irish comedian called Michael Legg, and on the other team is a lady called Margaret Cabon Smith. And they basically have two teams. They have two teams, and they're basically set by Danielle Ward. She will say, right, okay, here's a scenario, and the teams have to work out the right thing to do in whatever situation she has given them. I have got a couple of examples. One of them is the best way to get a pigeon out of your house.
But
what happens is they kind of, so you have other comedians making up the team.
Yeah.
And they all kind of riff on it and like, oh, well, what happens? You know, you could do it this way, or you could do it that way, or they will share personal experience of having wild animals in their houses.
Like you and your snake.
Yes, I did have a snake in my house once. So it's stuff like that, but then there is a guy who is like the kind of Richard Osman character on Pointless, where he's like, oh, okay, according to this website, which is a verified source, this is the best way to do it, so they get points depending on has the guess closest to what
kind of
the official line is. So it can be a bit smutty, just in case readers are a bit like, oh, no thank you, it's family.
Yeah, that's not
listening.
Computer Weekly readers, they have no interest in smut.
So, you know, it does go off on some interesting tangents, but no, it's really good. I think they're on series 7 at the minute. So
That actually sounds really fun.
They did try to make it into a TV show, but I think it's all been agreed that just keep it as a podcast.
Yeah.
I think, no, they're doing that with Brexit Cast, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're making it a TV show. What do we have to do to be a TV show?
Very good question, Claire. I'm not sure. I think maybe we need to kind of be more popular.
But no, I think they just find that it's they did go through the stages of trying to, or like some TV company, like, oh, we want to make this into a TV show.
Mm.
I think they found just, and this could be what would happen, this would be the barrier for us, is that it's just actually easier to be a lot more freewheeling and maybe a bit ruder or a bit more kind of, I think, yeah, the length of the podcast can vary according to how verbose their guests are and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So you get a lot more flexibility rather than thinking, right, you've got a 30-minute slot, you've got to fit into this once a week or
sure.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Or
there's already too much on TV anyway.
So that's one of my favorites.
That's one.
Mm-hmm. I've got a couple of others. The Richard Herring Leicester Square podcast. These are all kind of comedy related podcasts.
Okay.
But he's really good. It basically goes about an hour and 10 minutes, and he will just sit down with a guest, and they can be like, a lot of them are comedians, some of them are writers, some of them are kind of activists and stuff like that, or just prominent people who've come to the fore for whatever reason. And he just sits down and has like a kind of a, I'd say like an in-depth chat with them, an interview. But sometimes, it goes a bit freewheeling, it goes a bit off the rails, but some of the really most interesting ones are with people I just think I would never sit down and watch one of your shows or something.
Yeah.
But I'll give this a listen, because it usually scroll, plays on
Okay.
Like,
okay.
But yeah, one of my favourite ones he has done is with Les Dennis, which I think I'm pretty new about. Yeah, that's like the guy who did Family Fortunes for 15 years. I grew up with that on primetime TV on ITV. But his life story was just really, really fascinating. So
him and his
double act partner were the next act on after Tommy Cooper died on stage, and it was proper like show must go on, like off you go. And so, but he's just had an amazing career, just like, you know, so he went through that. He's been, you know, sort of from doing the working men's clubs to becoming like, you know, a commercial success with Family Fortunes for many years, and then going through kind of a sort of fallow period of like, okay, the phone stopped ringing, celebrity Big Brother calls, then the phone stopped ringing even more by his own admission. And then being picked up by Ricky Gervais to go on Extras, and that kind of helped sort of rejuvenate his career. And
now
he's
like
kind
that
of
episode. That was a great episode.
Yeah.
The whole of Extras is amazing.
It is very good.
And then, to Coronation Street, and now he's like treading the boards, I think, up in Edinburgh at the moment, as the festival's rounding out. But yeah, doing like kind of serious acting now. So he's just had like a really long, really varied career. But yeah, it's quite rare, I think, you get like on TV now where like a chat show host will sit down with a guest and really get into.
Yeah.
There's usually like 6 or 7 other guests on the couch or whatever, and it's kind of, hey, I've got this to promote. A lot of people, they don't have anything to promote, they're just there to have a chat. So it's really interesting. And he's done like hundreds of episodes now, so there's loads to dig into and just find like people through like the various podcast apps who you'd quite like to listen to tell you a bit about their life story and stuff like that.
I guess you could go through and find someone that you're interested in for the first time.
Yeah, it's like a bit of an entry point.
Yeah,
like you say, if you're on an 11-hour flight to San Francisco and flying with United, and there's no seats back entertainment or breaks down.
Actually, there was one.
Save your sanity. Mm-hmm.
There was a really good one actually with a comedian called London Hughes, and she was sort of talking about sort of the difficulties of being a female and trying to get in, like, get your big break in comedy.
Yeah.
But also, she is a woman of colour as well, so the other barriers there and all this sort of stuff. But there's loads of stuff in that that keeps, as I'm actually working on Computer Weekly and doing like writing stuff, that does kind of think, oh my gosh, she said that, and that makes so much sense.
Mm.
So it's like a thing about how she was saying about how she went for an audition to be on 8 out of 10 Cats.
Mm.
And you have to audit, like, it's not just, oh, you've got an agent, we'll put you on the panel this week to be a get. You have to audition, see if you'll work with the rest.
Well, yeah, because
what
if you're not funny?
Well, we'll see how do you work with the rest of the panel. Do you have a rapport and all this sort of stuff?
Uh-huh.
And she got told, you don't have enough experience. Like, you don't have enough experience to sort of do it. But then she was like, oh, there would be other male comedians who are white.
Oh,
and it's just like, well, they got fooled. Not because of it, like, they don't have experience. Like, you know, they don't have experience, and neither do you. But they do have promise. So so it's like men will get promoted on promise, women have to demonstrate experience. So that
that's
means
ridiculous.
Women have to work a lot harder to get the same. You have to, okay, I have
story
to go and get the experience.
Time.
Yeah, but it's just some of her observations on that were just really interesting. I think applied to lots of different industries.
Hmm.
So yeah, like I say, you learn so much listening to these things.
All of the industries.
Like I say, like, maybe I don't need books anymore, to be honest. But yeah, it's really, really interesting. So yeah, they're my two that I would say would be worth listening to. They're kind of related a lot. You get a lot of overlap. One who, like, some of the guests who turn up, and Richard Herring will turn up and do the right thing and stuff. But
okay,
really interesting stuff. Makes you think.
Yeah, it does.
Claire, you've got to pick up your sleeve.
Yeah, I do. So what I would recommend, and this is a children's book.
Cool.
Which I own, but I don't have any children. So
is it about talking boats?
Talking boat.
Yeah.
Oh, were you on the podcast that Brian gave?
Oh, yes.
Provided an insight into his idea for a children's book.
Yeah, I
like,
do
Thomas
remember
the Tank
that.
Engine, but on water.
No, you better get a wriggle on though, because it's twice you've mentioned it now. Have you patented it yet?
No.
Big mistake.
When this turns up on CBeebies, the next big thing.
Specifically, it was the water transport of Venice.
Yes.
And I'm going to Venice on holiday quite soon, so I can do some more research.
You can start the book. So this children's book is by an author and illustrator. Her name is Kate Pankhurst. And
any relation?
So her great-great-grandfather's brother's son's wife was Emily in Pankhurst. And so she's written a series of books. They're called Fantastically Great Women Who Made History, Fantastically Great Women Who Changed the World, and Fantastically Great Women Who Worked Wonders.
I've bought at least two in that series for my nieces.
Yes. Yes. See, and I have two of them as well. They're just really cool. It's sort of like an introduction to amazing women, and also sort of like a soft introduction into what you were just talking about, Caroline, like the idea of inequality and how far we've come versus how far we have to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it just sort of talks you through different women, their lives, how they influenced the world, what the world was like when they were doing all of their great stuff. So yeah, it's really cool. It's a picture book, which obviously makes it a lot more accessible. Yes, maybe you should start on them to get back into reading, Caroline.
Who?
Oh, you don't like reading.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
right.
I was
like,
you don't like reading.
I was like, my
nieces,
they read loads. I like that, you know, they read.
No,
not me.
I'm sure they do. But
I mean, the pictures sound appealing. Like the words are a bit much. Could work.
It's just a little stepping stone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I would recommend
really cool
them.
That she's a descendant all.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, she said, you know, like it goes a bit far to claim that she has suffragette blood,
or
because
like DNA,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, but that, you know, there is some relation. She thinks it's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah,
there's probably someone in their PR department at the publishing house. Like, no, you do have that DNA.
She's like, I can't make it happen. So that's
cool.
Me.
But you're also in the throes of preparing for our own event.
Yes. So 25th of September,
uh-huh,
our annual diversity and inclusion event in partnership with Mortimer Spinks.
Yeah.
So this year, the theme is Embracing Diversity and Inclusion, Making Tech the Best Place to Work. So it's all about how to make technology reflective of the industry that it aims to serve. So that's that. One of the alumni of the Top 50, Jacqueline Drucker, was on Desert Island Discs, which is something that our colleague Ryan Priest mentioned in podcast number 23.
Yeah.
The Controlled Chaos podcast.
Yeah.
He was saying that she picked a couple of like really cool things, and which doesn't surprise me because she is really cool in herself. So yeah, she's an alumnus. Subscribe to the event. Subscribe, sign up.
Like and subscribe.
Like and subscribe. We make new podcasts every week.
Yeah.
Well, women in tech and diversity has been a big theme of the podcast this year. We've covered a lot of, almost inadvertently sometimes, cover some very big picture things.
Yeah.
Climate change has come up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Some of your stories around AWS versus Greenpeace. And
And just
things like that.
Yeah, the data center industry generally is being increasingly held to account over its kind of energy use and where does it source its energy from. And lots of climate change activism now. It's increasingly becoming.
Yeah, we talked about
there.
The kids on the streets of London. I can't remember why that came up. But
the school strike because of Greta Thunberg. But like that kind of stuff is resulting in data centres kind of getting just more and more focused on them, and them kind of thinking, right, okay, so activists know who we are now. Could they take action against us? Like, I know it's supposed to be a peaceful process, but I think when you speak to contacts, it's like, we're on the radar now. For a long time we weren't, and that kind of meant we could sidestep sort of regulators or sort of, oh, people don't understand our industry, that means we're not so tightly regulated. So yeah, I think it's quite good.
I think a lot of retailers have been more conscious of it as well now, just making sure that all of their production is a little bit more ethical, and also publishing stuff on their website. That seems to be a big thing with retailers this year, making sure that their intentions are somewhere that people can go and look at them.
Yeah.
And just social media surrounding that as well.
Well, I think with retail, though, it could be, like, if your activities are found to be completely out of step with kind of sustainability and stuff like that, the effects of that could be quite damaging quite quickly. Like, people just say, okay, I'm not going to shop there.
Yeah,
and that could have, next quarter your results go right down. Whereas with the data center, oh, I don't like that, how they behave. Oh, I'm going to boycott them. I'm on a 20-year lease.
But yeah, one day.
I will walk, but I've got time. So it's a lot more, the effects of stuff like that can be, you know, a lot more hard-hitting, a lot more quickly in the retail sector. Definitely.
And technology can be quite an enabler for them, retailers, to make sure that it's, you know, a lot better.
And we've discussed Brexit, probably fairly reluctantly, but we did touch on it, and we certainly went through all the Conservative Party leadership candidates.
No, I don't remember that.
I enjoyed it, but it felt like homework.
You blinked out, haven't you?
Yeah, it felt like homework, like, go and research these, but sort of semi, they hope to be historical.
We did struggle to connect these characters to technology, that would be fair to say, apart, of course, from Matt Hancock.
Oh, yeah, I think I say Rory Stewart and his seems quite short-lived now, his Twitter career. Like, yeah. Turning up so much social in my timeline anymore.
Social media sensation.
Yeah.
Louis Stewart. We should say a big thank you to other team members who've helped us along.
Yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned Ryan just now.
Yeah.
The court jester of Computer Weekly.
Oh,
and our most frequent contributor, of course, is Alex Croxton, our networking editor.
I think I referred to him as just the most available. Like,
you did, yes.
And I wasn't sure if he was like, he took that as a compliment.
I think he took that in good heart.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You've said it again now, so.
Yeah, I was reinforcing it. So.
And it's the Huawei story has been a big feature of Alex's contributions. Mm-hmm. And I know I spoke about that too after my visit to Shenzhen in Hong Kong. I don't know if I mentioned that I was in Shenzhen.
Were you in Shenzhen?
All.
Just 8 or 9 times, that's fine.
And of course, our gaffer is in chief. He spoke about Huawei as well.
Mm-hmm.
Missing in action so far is Carl Flinders.
Very
we need to get Carl in to talk about the what we know is the post office story, which is a big story for us. So what have we got coming up in the autumn?
I know that I'm off to Vegas for Splunk.conf.
When's that then? Is that like September, straight out of the gates, or you got a couple of months?
No, so that's mid-October.
And also you got the Women in IT
event. The Women in IT event takes up a lot of my time up until then.
Yeah.
My first one is first week of October, the Net Events, which is like the big, kind of, it's like an analyst, press and analyst conference, but it's the kind of, I don't, it's not really hosted by just one company, there's lots of different Silicon Valley firms there. And usually, I don't know, usually there's like the theme of it makes me think, oh, it's not quite specialist enough for me to go. And then this time, they're like, it's a cloud and data centre, like, theme. Well, I was like, oh, I can't really not go. So yeah, that's my first one.
Where is that?
San Jose.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, right, okay. There's nothing there.
Yeah, well, that's what Brian Kipkus told me.
Apart from the Winchester Mystery House.
There is that.
Oh, you have to go and see the Winchester Mystery.
Is that the one from, was that in American Horror Story? Or
I don't recall.
Oh, it might not be.
And you know the way to San Jose.
Yeah, I will. I'll have to memorise this song. But yeah. Yeah, so that's so I know what my first one is, and I know what my last one of like the autumn winter thing is. It'll be AWS, because their event is happening, I think, the first week of December.
That's traditional, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's usually sort of later in November. This time they're going right up to Christmas.
Oh, right, okay.
So, but in between, there's a couple other bits and bobs. Yeah, there's well, Google Cloud Next, which is the London version of their American trip, which I went on. Later, I got told to save the date for that because I think it's the same week as Dreamforce.
Oh, really?
So yeah, so they're like, please, all the journalists will be gone. Please come.
Are you not going to Dreamforce?
And I will be one of them. I will be in San Francisco again for Dreamforce. Mm. Yes, indeed. The great hymn to the ego of Mark Benioff. And my first one is Larry Ellison's event, the Open World. In mid-September. So yeah, I'm expecting to hear a lot about autonomous database, machine learning.
Yeah, fun time, can't wait.
So we're going to take a bit of a break.
Yeah.
We're going to have a pause.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast pause.
Yeah. We're going to drop two podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
The next one will drop on Tuesday the 10th of September.
Mm-hmm.
We will be back. So listeners, thank you for listening. Enjoy your holidays in the meantime. It just remains for me to say thank you to Caroline.
Thank you, Brian.
And thank you to Claire.
Anytime.
And yeah, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.